Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's, at this point you can already tell, even if you did not make your way to our social media, you already know what we're going to talk about. The 2026-2027 national budget unveiling, of course, that was done this afternoon by the Minister of Finance. That's Madam Erica Shifuda. Dwight. Okay, now.
Yeah. Don't worry, guys. I'm here. I'm just quickly, you know, doing some writing.
Now, here's the thing. There are a lot of ways I can describe the unveiling. It's a good thing she left this statement for the last part where she said, the budget is about restoring balance between ambition and affordability. I was like, oh boy. And between growth and stability, and between today's needs and tomorrow's obligations. Translation, guys, we don't have enough of it to go around. We're going to have to make do with what we have given you.
Okay, Hamoud.
What?
Let's just put in a massive, you know, like what they do in algebra, that massive algebraic bracket. Ne? Mm-hmm. In there between, you say, 5% given to public servants.
700.
Close that bracket off.
Uh-huh.
The 5% increase, she also mentioned it.
Yeah.
Put it there and just mention the start of that sentence again like you said it. If we're looking at affordability discussions, do you know what's the biggest fear?
Yeah.
That we have to extrapolate from that 5% increase.
Yeah.
And it's also a discussion where I actually feel very sorry. And I have sympathized a lot with government employees, civil servants, and public servants across the board. Obviously, I am assuming that public servants from local authorities are separate from the particular wage bill discussion that we've got to look at, i.e. that their wages are negotiated differently and they are paid through a known particular sort of like subsystem. But I also assume probably things could have changed in the past 35, 36 years that said particular compensation or remuneration structures are literally part and parcel of the budget of MURD, Ministry of Rural, of Urban and Rural Development.
Yeah.
Because the local authorities fall under him, under that ministry. So, if you look at that 5% increase itself, we won't go into the minute details. The minister cited them there.
Yeah.
We won't go in there. But just think about, Helmut, the particular inflationary pressure that can be anticipated the next 2 years, the immediate 6 months from this week, because when did the Prime Minister had to go and sign that that negotiated agreement? Yesterday. So between yesterday from this week, count the next 3 months.
Yeah.
So we have to anticipate adjustments to the food basket, adjustments to various other particular consumer stuff, which is a very weird thing in Namibia. I don't still know why we don't properly measure consumption. We go and measure the impact of the inflationary pressures. So they go look at the pricing of the various goods that we buy every day, that we live off every day. But we don't go and actually measure the consumption. The last time we measured the consumption properly was we looked at the household discussion. Remember where we highlighted, where we discovered between 2018's labor force survey and 2023's labor force survey is that you saw, no, it's the census reports. 2011 and 2023 census reports, we saw households were bigger but fewer in 2011, but more and smaller in 2023.
2023,
So the bigger question we're asking here, which also then leads into the labor force survey discussion, is how much money is being spent in terms of what's that term they call that money?
Like per household?
Almost at recreational expenditure. Disposable income. How much disposable income is there?
I think when it comes to disposable income, the question you should be asking is there any disposable income out there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is also another particular thing, because remember what was read out at the end from page 22 by the minister speaks obviously to the operations, which obviously speaks to the said particular negotiation that was signed off yesterday by the Prime Minister regarding the 5% increase, which obviously has to reflect in the planning from tomorrow. Now, it would have been interesting if we had the time and the opportunity to listen to what the opposition parties would have highlighted. Since last year, I'm not holding my breath. There's been a few, you know, sort of like glimmers of hope. I won't sound very derogatory nor very nasty in saying glimmers of intelligence, but I'll just stick to glimmers of hope. Hope, i.e. being, is this a conversation that actually covers everyone's needs in the economy, or is it looking at specific needs only for a specific perspective and for a specific political, political vantage point or political sort of like gain? But yeah, Helmut, just in that light,
yeah,
I'm just putting that massive algebraic expression in there in that bracket for your introduction that you welcome us with, and then our listeners have to keep that at the back of their minds. That's the first point they've got to keep at the back of their minds.
Disposable income. What does
What does this 5% increase of yesterday have? What kind of impact would it have 3 months from now? What kind of impact would it have, i.e. that it literally comes the day before the budget unveiling, which is today?
What kind of impact is in factoring in the inevitable inflation?
Well, the inflationary pressures, like you highlighted, which is correct, is inevitable.
Yeah.
Because we would have already seen those adjustments already cascade through the Namibian economy. Every time when you go to your local retailer, your local shop, your local store, go look at the prices. Just go look at the prices.
No, I think this is the direct proportion between increasing a source of income. Not to say that you don't have to increase someone's source of income, but I totally agree with a lot of the people that look at economic progress by looking at what's the best way to solve problems in terms of cost. In terms of cost, do you increase someone's income or do you increase production? Because if you increase, and when you look at how the two are related, when you increase income, what happened to the prices? Because the production have not been touched, so that means the supply is going to remain pretty much the same.
Yeah.
So wherever there is going to be high demand, what happens to the price? Also goes up. Focusing on production would really help. Focusing on production would really help. Now that's actually the part that puts me on a slippery slope to page 15 of this, of this report, because I'm focusing on there are a lot of things that are very obvious. That's to be expected to be heard in every budget unveiling. That's how much amount of money is overall for that financial year, and how much every ministry or SOE is getting. Those ones are pretty obvious. But before we continue, commercial break.
Kapena ondando da falada Shoprite alu hokukunini ondando da wapivi mipumbiwa esiku gasho mbapira yako kanjuwa yo baby soft fresh yo onja diri mbali diri mongoi kodro mirango hetatu nambali no sanu mirango hoi nongoi osho omirite sile zomti wako maiko kwa Colgate ya triple action ningo omirito mirango heri nandano do active salt kodro ashiko nongona heri no sendo mirango hoi nongoi ino futashi wulite po Shoprite price ziriko siko kajetatu gamaritza nuvo ko Shoprite akuke waimina already steady cook ko One Africa no mapaduro ku Shoprite nami.
Welcome back. So there are certain things that are expected.
Yeah.
And obviously the amount of money that every ministry is going to get, it's always pointed out, even though when the ministers, was just reading through different, ministries, directories and how much the budget allocations were. And when she preached the, National Assembly is getting 416 million and everyone went, oh boy. No. Like, well, that's you guys. But look, for me, I think investing in production, like means of production, nothing beats that, because if you can produce more, you can easily, you can control the price.
Yeah.
Because as much as increasing, as much as salary increment is a good thing, it doesn't really have the impact that, increasing production would have as you know, at least not in, I mean, not in the long run, factoring in again the inevitable one, inflation.
Now, obviously, we've got to be cognizant that everyone tries to pay attention to these budgetary announcements that come through from Namibia and South Africa, for that matter.
Yeah.
The bigger, the obviously more important thing to facilitate, Helmut, has been the discussion on the developmental aspect of everything.
Yeah.
Now, what I did like what the minister provided, which is something I'm slightly annoyed at, when I attended that civil society with the ministers, sort of like mid-year budget review engagement back in October. Do you remember when I came back with that discussion about that? Only 30% of the developmental budget had been actually spent across the country.
Now, that is, that's what she addresses in, from page, you know, from page 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's basically getting slightly into that and also emphasizes, you know, the public procurement bill being one of the stumbling blocks in terms of, public procurement in Namibia is crucial for national development, promoting transparency and responsible financial management. However, current challenges have delayed project execution.
Okay, it's a broad explanation.
Very.
Very vague explanation, but it does...
It does touch the point of between the time that the budget is made available and mid-term budget review.
Yeah, and it also
like,
sort
like
of
the
like...
The time period is just...
And you can also see that it literally encompasses or it summarizes a particular perspective.
Yeah, it is summarizing.
So it's a good thing the minister highlighted. Vague, obviously, being that it would have been nice to see... The guts and gore. I'm sorry for making this sound like a Warhammer game specifically.
It sound gory.
You know, because they've got a specific function. You have the PG function where you don't see, you know, the effects of violence taking place. And then there is literally, if you wish to have a more, what do they call it? A more realistic,
okay,
a war realistic engagement.
More Rongten-ish.
No, not wrong turn ish. You're going horror movie. A war is an ugly business. Then you can literally switch on a function that says show guts, gore, and violence situation, mm-hmm. which is also something that I saw a lot in Gears of War. If you ever played Gears of War. But yeah. Sorry for taking that sideways, guys. But yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason why I prefer Sniper. I don't like gory. Yes, from a distance.
Let's keep it safe, guys. Keep it safe.
Yeah.
So we are obviously looking at a particular picture. The point that I liked that I mentioned before you expanded into sort of like the developmental budget aspect was the breakdown of what had taken place so far. Teachers being absorbed in terms of being given jobs. So that means there's an expansion to the wage bill of Ministry of Education.
Yeah.
So that technically also factors into possibly being further stimulation in terms of consumption locally in the country, i.e. Yeah. what does it mean? More salaries means more money being circulated. More money being circulated means more goods being bought. More goods being bought means more private sector flourishing. More private sector flourishing then translates to possibly people being hired to cater for these new salaries that are buying in the economy.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good reporting there from Minister Shifuda. Second scenario was the housing and the informal sector situation.
Yeah.
I know which page it is, Amit. You also know which page it is. It's literally page 3. And in the previous, in the first paragraph, it speaks about the mass housing projects or the mass housing handovers. Units that have been handed over from last year into this year by the mass housing program, by shack dwellers, by there's a third NHE, by there's a fourth entity that also did something. And then the next, and then they state there that there was a, you know, servicing of at least 2,100, or not servicing, let me not use the word servicing, of a, you know, a delivery of 2,100 units.
As in handing over.
As in handing over. But then you just flow into the next paragraph, which talks about the informal sector. What's the term they use? I mean, this term threw me out of the boat. I just have to be sure of it. Because I was like reading, are we talking about literally the MSME sector, or are we talking still on housing? Are we still under housing? Let me just quickly scroll to page 3. Yeah, no. An education targeted. Yeah, okay. It was before the sin taxes. In education, mass formalization of the informal sector. Yeah, yeah. It's paragraph 6 and paragraph 7 on page 2. So she states here that under the mass housing development program, 58 units were delivered in Windhoek alone, with a further 24 units nearing completion in Oudtshoorn. So you can, that's 58 plus 24, obviously. Additionally, 1,059 were delivered by shack dwellers of Namibia. It doesn't say where, so we assume across the country.
Yeah.
112 were delivered or built by NHE and handed over to homeowners, and through the basic sanitation program. Oh, so that's the 2,100 latrines, sanitation projects. That's the 2,100. Then the mass formalization of the informal sector program, which saw its 721 million allocation, which resulted in the construction of more than 2,100 houses, and the creation of 17,421 jobs. So, we obviously have what is designated as informal living areas, because I can't say informal sector, then it would throw anyone off in Namibia being, are we talking about MSME?
Yeah.
Are we talking about family business starting out in the house, or out of the kitchen, or out of the garage? Or is it a backyard venture being started up by, you know, some young entrepreneur? No. What the minister highlights here is that this is an additional 2,100 existing dwellings, if I can use that euphemistic term. 2,100 dwellings, meaning this is already a form of shelter for someone that is being literally made formal.
Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't say bricks and stones and, you know, planks and zincs, corrugated iron sheets being used.
I think it's standard in Namibia. We are very picky when it comes to, you know, the construction material we use for residential buildings.
Exactly.
Yeah, because when we say formal, you can easily assume, and you'd be right to assume, that it's a brick and mortar.
Exactly, Amud. And once again, when you count the numbers here, this is what, almost 4,000 units, ne? That we were talking about between the two paragraphs. 4,000 units.
Yeah.
4,000 units, Helmut, versus the mythic or the fabled 300,000.
Yeah.
It's tiny.
Drop in the ocean.
It's drops in the ocean, my guy.
Well, just look on the bright side. That's number 6, page 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last paragraph. The last sentence. Through the basic sanitation program, after the latrines and the communal facilities were constructed using a budget of
37 million.
Paragraph. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nine land servicing capital projects were completed at a cost of nearly 160 million, preparing land for future urban development. You can bet that's going to be in the 2028 financial year report. This is how much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is how much servicing was done from the previous year, and this is how much development have taken place. But as of now, we can, you know, there's land being serviced, actually completed at a cost of 160 million.
Yeah, so it was already serviced.
Yeah, it's already serviced.
We assume the roads had already been laid.
Water installation and all that.
Yeah, had already been done. The biggest concern, obviously, has been Helmut.
And in all that, employment creation.
Yeah, which is temporary employment.
Yeah.
I mean, the politicians won't say it's permanent or temporary. They would just say, no, it created so many jobs. And then you're like, okay, for how long? No, for as long as the project is there. As long as the project is there. And you're like, so it's temporary. So you're not talking about something that's fixed. Do you know what's one of the nice things, Hamut?
Yeah.
Primarily when we look at the discussion. And this is still a conversation. You remember when I pitched to you last year about the idea of we have to research where does the salary and wages discussion come from? Now, I can give you a logical presentation right now about the Namibian context.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got something known as not just the Credit Agreements Act, but also it's almost like a system specifically of trade and commercial activity that exists within Namibia, being you sometimes get that invoices are paid every 7 days or invoices and accounts are paid every 30 days. Now, in the extremes of things, some companies, when it's business to business operations,
yeah,
it's every 45 days from the creation of the invoice. So you've got that scale of money circulating in the economy, highlighting specifically to those in the trade, specifically that, you know, you have a predictable measuring method that allows you to predictably manage your financing, your cash flow, and all your other particular financial responsibilities. But now I ask you, with the denim blue eyes that I do not have, that I definitely don't own on my name, or even anywhere in my genealogy, the particular discussion of accessibility to money is still a talking point that has not been fully exhausted in Namibia, because I was so, and I experienced a wage system before, being paid every week. So you've got money every week. You're being paid every 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
You get a piece. So you've got this overall, you know, earnings amount, this amount that you earn. And if you're like a casual worker, that amount gets broken up into 4 weeks and you get paid every 7 days. But if you are a permanent employee of the same establishment that I worked at, you get a portion of your salary exists, ne, which gets paid in every end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other portion of your salary is the portion that's broken up over the 4 week period that you get paid every 4 weeks, every 7 days.
Yeah.
Over 4 weeks. Now, that particular illustration, Helmut, also obviously shows you also a predictable method, a predictable manner in which income is, or money is being circulated in the Namibian economy. But here's the question we've got to ask. If we keep allotting jobs created next to the mass housing program, ne, we have to ask the question, okay, so were these permanent or temporary jobs? For how long were these people employed? What was the scale of wages paid?
Get your glow on with ShopRite's Hair and Beauty Ring. Visit your nearest store and buy everything you need to nourish your skin, love your hair, and look your best. Keep on shining with deals like 400 ml Dawn Body Lotion, all cream, all variants for $29.99 each. And 125 ml Easy Waves Regular All Course Cream Relaxer for only $22.99 each. Don't miss out on our great deals to get your glow on. Offers valid until 8 March 2020. Only at ShopRite.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
And welcome back. Just a minute past the hour of five. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Hamd and Dwight on Eagle FM. And of course, on the table today is the national budget unveiling of 2026-2027 financial year. There are some, you know, the more you listen to this, the more you begin to realize that there's never going to be enough money. You always have to make do with what you have. It doesn't sound very different from, you know, your you know, you and I and our salaries or whatever source of income that we have going for us, just make sure it's the legal ones. There's, you know, not everything is dark and gloomy, though. There are a lot of things that are coming out of them, coming out of that announcement, especially, you know, a few, especially on page 25, there you have something that a lot of Namibians, especially the youth, would, you know, is something that put a smile in a lot of youths, you know, faces, at least those ones that were listening, even though you guys are, I mean, the youth would just never be serious. The budget unveiling is being announced and these guys are roasting each other in the comment section of the stream. This one is saying, I'm watching from Ohangwena. I don't know who was asking people, where are you watching from? But they just kept sharing. And some of them just kept making up stuff. I'm watching from my mother's womb. I'm like, for the love of God, who asked? But yeah, well, now, in case you missed it, because you're busy typing, I'm watching from my mother's womb. I mean, that's a good one. Very good job. A total, for example, of 8.1 billion allocated to the Ministry of Home Affairs and Immigration, Safety and Security, of which 108 million has been earmarked to for the recruitment of the Namibian Correctional Services, a recruitment of the Namibian Correctional Services. So employment, well, it's that spells employment, and 158 million for the translation of the 2033 NAMPOL cadets in training and the recruitment of 2000 NAMPOL cadets. So, employment?
Look, they're still being paid, Amut. Even if they're a cadet, they're still being paid.
Well, a recruitment of 2000 NAMPOL cadets. Well, that speaks in, if we're talking about employment, right? Like, something long term like this, I would call that employment. But you know, we had this construction project where five people were employed, and now the congratulations, we are here to tell you that the project has been completed. That means those people are not working anymore, right?
Yeah.
So our unemployment statistics is like it's like that line on what's that thing in the hospital, EKG, you know, always going up and down. Yeah, you know, it's never fixed easy, you know, it's just going up and down. Yeah. Although, everyone that, you know, well, health professionals will tell you that if the EKG is going up and down, that means you're alive. If it's flat, cooked. And not just that, you know, magistrates are also looking, now the Ministry of Justice or the Justice Department or the Justice, call it the Justice Ministry or basically the Administration of Justice in Namibia is also, well, having a few smiles in there, those ones that are actually, well, that were following the budget unveiling, because there are also some recruitments being mentioned there. This is a very, well, I mean, it's just a 30-page document that summarizes everything that you are listening, the minister, you know, that you are listening to from the minister of, you know, from the minister of, from the minister of finance. Now, when it comes to employment, obviously every, you know, you are going to have, well, permanent and temporary, and the things are going to go up and down. One day, I mean, every day someone is being recruited, and every year someone is being recruited, and every year someone is going in retirement. And although my favorite statement is coming out of Uganda on that, like, why should you allow someone who is and I'm paraphrasing here, why should you allow someone who is good at their job to retire? Like, seriously, dude?
Look, it's a good job. It's a good question, Hamid. If you are experiencing birth rate decline, if you are experiencing brain drains, if you are experiencing, let's say there was a major event like a war.
Okay, look, war, yes, we have a lot of political and, political unstable countries on the African continent. But, birth decline, brain drain, yeah, we are also struggling with that. But birth decline, we are not there yet. Mm. Now, if you followed the discussion between, Tucker Carlson and those African leaders, that unfortunately for us, represented us. You know, I'll explain why I'm saying unfortunately for us. They represented us in that us as in African. You know,
I also don't know why that conversation took place, and then, but I have a sneaking suspicion some Zimbabwe is part of that thing.
Yeah, well, the Zimbabwean president was there.
Yeah, it was Musmina Mgagwa that was sitting there that was just giving, you know, one-liners.
Yeah.
And then he went like, you know.
They's beating around the bush. Homeboy was beating around the forest. He didn't answer. I mean, that's why Tucker Carlson said, okay, I understand some of these things may be difficult to discuss in public because he...
I also don't know why Mnangagwa for the whole of that. You know, it annoyed me so much. Just that first 10 minutes there. I knew he would not be like, what do you call it? He would not be articulating or participating in the conversation because immediately when you look at someone's body language,
posture,
and they sit like this from the get go, they sit like this, sheltered. Like,
homeboy is not here to answer questions.
He was literally feeling, you know, this is not the platform I enjoy. Then you know you're not going to have a conversation. You can forget about it. And knowing Tucker has his reputation from his Fox News days, right? He obviously had to carry a flag there.
You know who I would not want to sit across the table from if I end up in public office?
Yeah.
Mehdi Hassan. Not a chance.
Helmut, Mehdi is technically on your level. It's just that the difference between Mehdi and the two of us is that Mehdi has written books.
Look, one thing I like about the guy is that he's very technical.
No,
in the way that he's asking his questions.
No, he is.
Yeah. Now coming back to the Tucker African leaders in Dubai. I don't even know how to describe that event.
Government summit or something like that.
World government. There were about five people. What world were they talking about?
Yeah, there were like five people representing Africa. One Anglophone, one Francophone. What was the other two presidents?
There was a president of Botswana was there. President of Sierra Leone was there.
Yeah.
And then,
was Boko sitting next to them? Duma?
Yeah. He's the one that was, he's the one that was asked, about what Botswana is doing to keep the youth in the country, which speaks to the brain drain discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have this, Africa is this continent that's known for, it's not facing that birth decline problem yet. Yeah, it's one of the questions that Tucker posed to President Biya of Sierra Leone, that the African continent is a lot of countries are facing a population decline, but your country Sierra Leone and a lot of all across the continent, they're not facing that problem yet. What are you doing different? Oh boy, we are hard workers both during the day and at night. I was like, okay.
I'm sorry, but I can't believe some of those responses. I mean, I didn't even make it past the first 10 minutes. I'm really sorry.
That's why you should laugh at comedians' jokes, because if you don't laugh at their jokes, they find themselves in political positions and they start answering questions like that.
Well, at least no one is Zelensky, you know?
Just don't start a war with a nuclear power. That's a bad idea. Brain drain. Yeah, that's a major concern for the African continent. And I think the part of today's budget unveiling, especially the beginning, the major concern that everyone was facing, actually looking forward to hearing, especially the youth, is this the 2026-2027 financial year. Budget going to be somewhat favorable in comparison to last year with regards to youth empowerment. As a leader now on the African continent, not just on the African continent, in the developing countries, you have to balance between, you have to prioritize the youth because, well, they are literally your future workforce. And also look at how much budget you have, how much money you have, because you don't have enough to go around. If you don't prioritize them, what happens, what has been observed in a lot of developing countries is that you start facing brain drain. A lot of them basically leave to go and look for greener pasture. And this is not something that is new. This is as old as time. We have been migrating all throughout history.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are always on a constant look up for something that is better than where we are. So how do you keep the youth? Like, that's a very important question that, you know, that Duma Boko was asked, you know, asked by Taka. You have a youthful population, like basically all across the African continent. What are you doing to keep them in a country? How are you deterring them from having to, you know, hop on a plane and they go to Germany or, well, the UAE? Which is a very tricky thing to do if you are a leader in the, you know, in a developing country. Because you're looking at just how much finance you have to go around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, okay, so when we localize things now from this budget discussion, Helmut, another interesting thing is obviously just also to sensitize the listeners. Sometimes looking at the operations allocation that the ministries will get doesn't always translate to the development budget scenario as well, because it's not even assume, you can always count on the developmental budget not being massive, but it being contained in a manner. So when I say contained in a manner, it means what, for example, the report card that was given at the start of the budget reading by the minister is literally, those were the goals that we aimed to achieve in the past financial year.
But
for the new, you know, particular event to happen or events to happen across the country in the coming financial year, watch out for the space, because this is just the budget amount. Last year's one was about 12 billion. The budget, the developmental budget allocation. That's the 30%. That's from that 12 billion. It was the 30% that we wrote about that highlighted that only 30% of that 12 billion had actually been spent across the country. Mm-hmm. Now, here's another funny thing. Budget allocations for local authorities and other particular state-owned entities and offices and mechanisms of the government, they can literally, their financial years probably, or their budget allocations probably would like overlap in scenarios, meaning you will find that the money was not spent completely in one particular scenario or a project.
Like in one directorate or one project.
Exactly. Or the project was begun in this financial year. It was earmarked in the budget unveiling or whatever situations that happened in the planning there in the planning halls of the government. And the project literally spans across multiple financial years. For example, something like Neckartal.
Yeah.
It literally overlapped over multiple financial years.
Yeah.
So then you sit with a weird scenario, meaning the same project, which began in which year, impacts the budget allocation or the budget or how flexible a budget can be for 5, 6, 7
financial
years. And this is the reality. We always, every year that we've got to sit with those lenses, with those frames. And we've got to literally anticipate these particular moves, because you've got to look at which moves are the virgin moves, meaning the new moves, mm-hmm. the move
and
that
which ones are coming from the previous financial year.
Yeah, or they are overlapping projects or multiple financial year overlapping projects that continuously impact monetary allocations every time to certain particular endeavors of national infrastructure development, capital project installations, and so on and so forth. There is also another... Okay, this is actually a little bit of some bad news. When I say it's bad news, because unfortunately impacts some of the coolest consumers that I've ever known in my life. I still know them. I'm sorry for such, you know, for such exaggerated terminology, Helmut. But you know what? We also know such consumers, alcoholics and smokers, or alcohol consumers and tobacco consumers. The unfortunate thing is you guys are going to see sin taxes being increased against you through a SACU agreement, which makes things a little bit, you know, sketchy. And when I say sketchy, okay, it's not sketchy because she's literally motivating. But it ultimately shows always, because this is one of the, and I actually thought about it before coming to the studio, Helmut, would we see another syntax increase? And when you ask that particular question, do you know what is the worst part currently happening in terms of population trends happening in the world? Is that younger people don't want to consume alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
They would love to drink beer, but they don't want to drink alcoholic beer. That's why you've seen the Heineken 0.0 marketing campaigns happening.
Hence the increase in non-alcoholic
beverage production. The same too you've also probably would have seen here in Namibia's production, for example, the massive output on those flavored beers, the Radlers and those things, and the other beers with the lesser alcohol content. The major Japanese beer producer, Sahi is the beer's name. Because they advertise with Manchester City Football Club. They have also a 0.0 beer. I saw in China last year a 0.0 beer, even though that Tsingtao beer is probably the best beer alongside the Belgian beer that I drank, Grolsch. That is because it tastes like beer, Helmut, that you want to eat. You don't want to drink the thing. You want to eat that beer. But yeah, besides obviously, you know, sort of like romanticizing beer drinking. But yeah, the aspects of that has been, what do these consumption trends also, how do they represent themselves on the ground? Because when it comes to syntax allocations, okay, not allocation, but rather syntax adjustments. Because a syntax adjustment, Helmut, is always the quickest taxation income that a government wants to make. Now, yes, it obviously also tells, because it's an inflationary pressure, even though...
Because you're not going to say no.
You're not going to say no, yeah, as the consumer, but yeah, you're also not going to, if you're the business of that bar, or, look, if you're the business owner of a bar, or the business owner of a club, yes, you would also see, okay, I would have to adjust my markup per beer bottle, per shooter, per shot of whiskey, per shot of whatever, you know, anything alcoholic, you'll have to adjust things. Because bars, nightclubs, pubs, shebeens, you name it, cooker shops, anything that dispenses or sells alcoholic beverages, they would obviously go like, okay, so price per unit has increased. Let me just get that. What is that increase? I think it's like a $1 increase.
On syntax.
On the syntax, yeah, between the, for example, the beverages, that's Global Outlook. But it was literally like, if you factor in that 23 Namibian dollars is sort of like a major application on, you know, a price per unit. And she obviously speaks about, I just need to find the page. She obviously speaks about, the millage or the measurement. In terms of how they apply this particular syntax weighting. The other one is also obviously for the tobacco products. Here we go. So they split it up. You got the tobacco products at the top, and you've got the alcoholic beverages to the bottom on page 22 of the statement. She cites, for cigarettes, the increase will be from 22 Namibian dollars and 81 cents to 23 Namibian dollars and 58 cents per pack of 20. So that's technically almost a 70 cents or an 80 cents difference. The allocation, the adjustment that is taking place.
Yeah.
Please do understand for all the listeners and the tobacco consumers out there that a 20 pack cigarette, product does not cost 23 Namibian dollars, or will not cost 23 Namibian dollars and 58 cents, just to let you know. The most expensive products, obviously, is the British American products. They can range anywhere up to 70 to 80 Namibian dollars, and it depends, obviously, on the outlet where you find it. And, you know, there might be obvious price variations between the various outlets that dispenses. Pipe tobacco. That's obviously if you are a fanatic of Dingler's black and white tobacco and you like rolling your own pipe.
Peaky Blinders.
That too. You like to, you know, you'd like to cosplay being Peaky Blinders for some reason. You're looking at 321 Namibian dollars and 37 cents, which was the old particular price tag, or which was the old particular, syntax, to an increase of 332 Namibian dollars and 26 cents. So that's almost a $9 to $10
increment.
Yeah, it looks like a $10 increment on a kilogram, on net, on per kilogram net. So meaning per kilogram. So if you buy a 5 kilogram, you could easily pay a 1,000 something. If you just buy the 1 kilogram or the 500 gram, it obviously depends on what that looks like. If it's a cigar, yes, from 5,843 Namibian dollars to 6,041 Namibian dollars. Huh? A ridiculous 200 and some, it's almost 300 Namibian dollars that I'm reading here. Yeah, it's almost 200 Namibian dollars. So yeah. Oh, they are cheaper cigars, Helmut. You just have to know where to look. But yeah, to get your Cubano.
If you'd
feel like once being a
Chebo, that's enough for an end.
To being a Fidel, you know, you stand because that was the signature move by Fidel. He always walked around with a Cuban cigar.
Some of us were raised in a very African way that even now that I'm an adult. I'm scared to stay out late because there's that trauma that's still stuck in my head that if I go later at home, I'm going to get beaten up, you know, until my ID constantly remind me that actually, well, you're the one that should be doing the beating by now.
That you're an adult.
Yeah, but yeah, then I keep telling myself, but do we really have the budget for that? And the answer has always been no. Now.
The wines.
Let
me get to the wines quickly, Amber.
Yeah.
So the syntax application on the wines or on the alcoholic beverages or the beverages considered to be alcoholic of nature, but now obviously have also changed in terms of market trends.
Yeah.
Sparkling wine will see a 19 Namibian dollars and 3 cents adjustment to 19 Namibian dollars and 68 cents. So that's a 65 cent adjustment. Not much per liter. Spirits from 292 Namibian dollars and 91 cents to 302 Namibian dollars and 84 cents per liter of absolute alcohol. Yeah. So that ultimately means the guys that love their brandies, their whiskies, their vodkas, their, their tequilas, their schnapses, their Witblitzer and all those other weird things that are cooked up, but sold legally over a counter. You see this particular adjustment taking place.
Enemy of progress.
Police. Hey, we know who you are. We know who you are, guys. Don't worry. We're Namibians. Then you also get the clear malt beer, or as it's known, clear beer, from 145 Namibian dollars and 7 cents to 149 Namibian dollars and 98 cents. So that's a $5 difference. Almost a $5 difference per liter of absolute alcohol. And then for ciders and alcoholic fruit beverages, you know, things that are made from, that are alcoholic beverages, but made from fruits. So we're talking about ciders and what's the other? And ciders are apple. And what's the other one? And these other particular smaller cocktail situations that you find also in bottles. They're from $145 Namibian dollars and 7 cents to $149. Same particular adjustment as well. Now, the reason why that thing is hidden there. Okay. It's not the only reason.
Was that the alcohol beverages?
The syntax adjustments. Oh, yeah. Because it obviously has to tell anyone out there in the economy, this is going to be one of the main sort of like cash flow drivers for the government. And it is going to be a cash flow driver for the government. It's not going to go away very easily. The reason why I also start with this particular measure, Helmut, every time when we have this budget discussion, is primarily this is how restaurants and other particular tourist elements get impacted as well.
Yeah.
Because of the syntax adjustments. Yes, a tourist that comes here with euro and with US dollars and with, what's the other major in, currency? And with British pound. When they come here, yeah, it's nothing to them. I mean, a can of Coke costs $60 in Germany, where my niece is. $60 Namibian. A can of Coke. 300 ml.
60.
60. A can of Coke. $60 Namibian.
That's 2 2-liters plus change.
Helmut, that is criminal. That is 3 2-liters on the dot. 60. For a can of Coke. 300 ml. When they obviously come into Namibia, they're obviously enjoying high-grade food, high-grade beverages, you know, alcoholic beverages. And they obviously get the best kind of tourism experience in terms of scenery, locals, and the likes. So their money works for them. But you've got to ask yourself the question, must I now forego supporting local businesses that sell alcoholic beverages because we now have adjustments, even $5, $3, a dollar here, 60 cents over there. It doesn't sound like much, but it actually does have profound impact.
Yeah.
Because once again, these are consumption taxes put on consumables, immediate consumables.
So what you're telling me is that, we must respect people who chill because they are.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Helmut, definitely.
You must respect people that are chilly.
Because they actually...
They are the ones that are running the economy.
It's not the banks. It's not the bankers. No. It's not... okay, in many cases it is government employees also, you know, kicking up their feet and just chilling a little bit with a beer.
Yeah.
But yes, we do actually have to sort of like...
Appreciate their chilling.
Exactly. The appreciation has to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, you have retailers that literally open up a bottle store right next to their,
the grocery store.
Next to their fruit and fridge, fruit and veggies and what's the kiddies stuff and toys and stationery products for school.
Yeah.
Just to tell the dads, listen, if you have stress, here's your relief.
Yeah. We got you, you know, we got you covered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you have a braai or if you want to have a party, but the adults' party is separate to the kiddies' party. Yeah, sure. You know, here's a few sort of like lubricating elements that can help you just endure.
Yeah, but the shopping can be somewhat tricky. Imagine walking out of a shop with a six-year-old cake, and if you walk in a bottle store, everyone is like, "Are you sure you want to combine these two?"
Hamut, no one cares.
Hmm?
Today, no one cares. Even the lady behind the counter will ask you, "Oh, whose cake is that?" And you will say, "No, it's my 6-year-old daughter's cake." "Are you having a party?" "Yes, that's why I'm buying." Then you'll even lie, that's why I'm buying the vodka, the tequila, and, you know, everything that's nice here with you guys. But yeah, we're having a party.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the syntaxes are going to be the money spinner, cash flow spinner, obviously. It's just, I never see to what amount they actually create cash flow for the government.
Like putting their take for example annual contribution separate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We don't see it. We see it, yeah, there somewhere abstractly.
So the increment is is calculated separate.
Yeah.
But the contribution at the end of the day is not separate. It's just put in the whole bucket of this how much you have made.
Exactly.
Speaking of appreciating people that chill and how much they contribute to our economy, get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops, a Smirnoff 1818 original vodka for only $159.99. Harry's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for $179.99 each. KWV 3-year-old Brandy for $199.99. Richelieu Brandy for $189.99. And J&B Scotch whiskey for just $239.99 each. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care.
Velvice University for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses: Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvetia University, where everyone is an achiever. You're about to say, Amut.
Welcome back. It's 28 minutes left to the hour of 28 minutes left to the hour of 6. So we're still with the 2026-2027 budget allocation. So on page 20, starting it from page 13, and oof, my battery is about to say goodbye. Now, starting from page 13, you have a lot of things being pointed out about policies and how, you know, and the necessary amendments that are going to be made. And the minister did point out that on, you know, after a few consultations, one thing that they, you know, one thing that they learned, which made me laugh because she made it sound like it was an epiphany, that, you know, investors want, you know, want clear cut policy. And like, yeah. I mean, that's as obvious as daylight. They want, you know, they don't want, shape shifting policies that, you know, it means this today and that, you know, the next day it's, you know,
it's reinterpreted.
It's reinterpreted. And maybe a different guy is in charge that decides to dissolve the constitution and then come up with a whole new constitution. Therefore, well, restructuring everything.
Yeah.
So that's where she now explains, all the amendments that are, you know, all the amendments that are set to be made and the reasons why. So, and you have the Public Procurement Amendment Bill. That's, that one is actually my favorite because every time that, I want to complain about what a ministry is not doing. It's good to, you know, it's obviously good to look at them and say, you know what, this amount of money was allocated to this ministry or this, this SOE. Why are they not doing this and this and this? Why are they not, completing these projects on time? It always takes me to the Oshagati courtroom door. Like, those guys, I don't want to use the word the excuse they gave. It was a genuine concern that they gave. That and I like the order that these two, you know, those two reports followed each other. The Constitutional Legal Affairs report that captured that very poetic story of the now famous / infamous Oshagati courtroom door pointed to some, you know, the main hindrances behind behind the executions. You can give someone money, but for them to execute these plans, even if they have the money, they have to follow specific procedures. Now, those procedures are there for transparency, of course. Yeah. They are not punitive measures.
And also for good governance.
Yeah, for good governance.
Yeah.
But they have become somewhat, they're a double-edged sword. They will provide you the necessary transparency, yes. But also, they can also, they've also become at this point, especially when it comes to the Public Procurement, Public Procurement Act, has somewhat become a hindrance towards the execution of, of projects because you have, the time that the budget is made available today to October, you have this time to basically follow all the procurement procedures. And also, you also have to understand that you're not just following the, you're not only paying attention to the procurement procedure, but to the public procurement procedures. The institutions or the small local businesses that you obviously want to prioritize in terms of, in terms of tenders. Not questionable, guys, sometimes. You say they will wake up one day and start telling you that, you know, they underquoted you and then they will abandon everything. Now, what's going on here is, you now have a situation where you want to follow the Procurement Act step by step to allow for transparency and good governance. And, you start in March. By the time that you get, by the time that you get to October, mid-term budget review. The Ministry of Finance is going, okay, let's see how much money you have spent and how much you didn't, so we can take some of it and then just give it to these guys that have already started with their project.
Yeah.
And at this point, especially if you are, you are dealing with a lot of people that don't understand how the world of procurement works, which is basically, most, Namibians, because if you listen to things that we complain about, most of them, you know, can easily be factored into the, you know, into the whole, well, a little too elaborate procurement, procurement discussion, which again, the ministry, the Oshagati courtroom door is not the only one. Now, I pointed to that because that's what the guys from the Ministry of Work said, that we have the money, we have everything to fix it, but we have to follow the procurement laws in place, which is a genuine explanation that they're giving you. Now, look at, at this point you're going, well, it's a door that's open. There are a lot of confidential documents in that building.
Yeah.
Why can't you just go there? Why can't you just go the emergency procurement way? Well, the guys at the Ministry of Health did that. The Office of Auditor General compiled a whole report on them.
And then cited...
Not a good one.
Yeah, and, well, it was also cited in many other discussions, for example, like in civil society that, what do they call that? Emergency procurement is sometimes used as the excuse to fast-track certain particular procurement discussions that are not designated as emergency.
Yeah, they are not. Yeah, they don't fall under the procurement, the Public Procurement Act's definition of what constitutes emergency. That's why the guys from the Ministry.
And the Auditor General literally also cited the saying.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that you classified as emergency procurement.
Yeah.
But under the explanations provided in the Procurement Act, it doesn't match. It doesn't match the emergency procurement scenario. Yeah. So yeah, we've obviously got those particular differing scenarios happening.
Factor in the pettiness of Namibian business owners when you are and look, this is very standard. I'm pretty sure I'll do the same. If you and I applied for a tender and your company won, I would be looking for an excuse to challenge the fact that you won. Obviously when we are engaged in this dispute, we are in August.
At this point, probably...
They have to put everything on hold.
Exactly.
Until the dispute is settled. And you know what? In the middle of our dispute, while the project is on hold because we are in dispute, we are the one buying super away and going, this project has been on standstill for 10 years. A public office will give you a heart attack, I swear.
Are you sure, Helmut? The people I've seen are pretty relaxed, you know, in public office.
Really?
They're pretty relaxed.
I like the abbreviation, the Afrikaans abbreviation of the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development.
Stop it, Helmut.
Okay.
But yeah. You are right.
I think you are not to make an excuse for ministries and SOEs, obviously, but every time that I look at the process that actually they have to, you know, and I'm looking at this not from a specific ministry or a specific political party. I'm looking at it from the from one standing committee report and one Office of the Auditor General's report. You can easily see what happens. And in the public sector, it's very, from the look of things, very sensitive. You just don't follow one section of a piece of legislation, and someone in the media finds it, they write a whole article on it.
Yeah.
And technically, you'd be wrong. That's the problem, the technical part of it. Did you fix the door? Yes. But thank you very much for fixing the door, but you didn't follow the Public Procurement Act. Yeah, but I didn't eat the money. Yeah, we know. No one is above the law.
And you even spent it to the cent.
Yeah.
But... You didn't. You were selected on a non-transparent, not following the real procedures scenario, which technically means we can't pay you.
Yeah. So the whole legislation discussion is a double-edged sword.
Mm.
That's why she points out here that I pointed out earlier that the public procurement in Namibia is crucial for national development, promoting transparency. It's a very, look, it's, it's a good thing to do, because you don't want ministries and SOEs or executive offices, both the prime minister and president, office of the president, playing cowboy with public funds. Mm. You need the legislation in place. Now, the thing is, we have to find that sweet spot between following the legislation for transparency and good governance, and making sure that there is actually execution of projects going on in the ground.
And that's where we get to, like, pages 25, 26, 24, and 23. And 22, sorry. Okay, it starts from 23, where it literally speaks. Because I've been trying to understand the developmental aspect of what will transpire, what we can look forward to in the economy. So we've already spoken about the syntax adjustment. Now, Helmut?
Yeah.
We've already also highlighted certain particular measures in terms of a report card score, recounting what had been done in the past financial year as well. But we obviously need to understand, for example, what were the further aspects taking place? Now, she cites here on page 23 of her statement that the social sector, encompassing education, health, social safety nets, and youth empowerment, remains the largest government spending. For 2026-2027, the sector is allocated $54 billion, which accounts to 61% of the total budget, excluding the interest payments. And the prioritization of education and health in this budget reflects, obviously, government's particular commitment in its objectives of NDP 6. And that these investments are aimed at strengthening human capital, improving productivity, and obviously supporting inclusive growth. Now, I also have to put a caveat in here, just a disclaimer. And this is nothing against the government specifically. It's just for the listener out there. Never think of the government as a household. Meaning, why are we spending so much here? Why are we spending so much there? The reason why we've got these developmental budgets, Helmut, is actually that they tell the private sector that literally there is still going to be a continuation in investment in these particular sectors, so you can still position your services and your particular business mechanisms close to it. Now, I needed to understand this particular point back in last year when I obviously looked at the various economists on their YouTube channels on YouTube, Michael Keane, Richard Murphy, where both of them explained, do not never think of a government as a business, or never think of a government as a household.
Okay, how am I thinking of it?
How you need to think of it, if you want to see, what do they call that thing? You know, the good times scenario?
Yes.
So the good times are, jobs are being made, are being created through the mass housing project. The subsidization of tertiary education, the expansion of, let's say, for example, the public health facilities across the country, and upgrading of those facilities so that they can obviously also start offering other kinds of services and the likes. Just giving an example, obviously. And obviously also, you know, the improvement in governance and other particular elements, which would obviously cost money because you need to do certain moves and do certain shaking abilities and situations. And all of this tells the banking sector, the other participants in the Namibian economy of the private sector, that there's going to be an aspect of stimulation taking place. Meaning, there's going to be contracts that the government will have to source from the public sector, from the private sector.
Yeah.
This means, if the mass housing project still continue, or the mass housing program still continues, that so many bags of cement can possibly still be sold. So many sheets of corrugated iron can still be sold. Can still look at when these houses are completed, those homes, you can anticipate families will move in. Families will need shops. Families will need a service station. Families will need education. Families will need healthcare and a pharmacy, because it's not just good enough having a doctor. The doctor must be a pharmacy that the doctor can say, here's a prescription, go over there.
Yeah.
Go dose yourself
and
up.
Those two are more often
yeah
close to each other.
Very close to each other. Which will also say, police officers would need to be appointed, or an expansion of a police station taking place. So you see these ongoing positives that I'm highlighting.
Yeah.
That's what the government budget has to do. It has to literally tell a economic planner, the marketer, the business owner, the industrialist, the manufacturer, Helmut, oh, this is what's going to happen in the next year. This is what I can expect in the next coming 12-month period up until December or January next year.
Yeah.
I need to anticipate so many new jobs will come along, meaning so many salaries will be there with possible disposable income.
Yeah.
They'll start buying this. They'll start buying that. They'll start eating this. They'll start living here. They'll need transport. They'll need internet. They'd like the latest smartphones. They'd like the latest clothing. And so it speaks to positives. But we also got that indication at the start of the speech, Helmut. Remember the teachers?
Yeah.
The aim was to give employment to 650 or 660 teachers. And they ended up with 2,000 something teachers being appointed, which is a positive. I mean, that's above 100%. That's more than 200% even, in terms of the target that they wanted, and
what they actually accomplished.
Exactly. So you see that particular scenario happening. So now there's 2,000 more teachers earning salaries, spending money in the economy. It's small, it's a drop in the ocean, but it's a starting point. Now, obviously, we're still going to talk about the UN Conference of Trade and Development's report, Helmut, which has to literally support these particular endeavors that, for example, like what we see at the start of every year, you know, the opening of Parliament. We still have to look forward to the State of the Nation address by the President. We've already now gone through the budget tabling discussion. So obviously the next is the State of the Nation. We obviously have to look at the report cards and what are the new particular directions to be taken in this year. Mind you, it does not say that the previous policies have ended. You get even like open-ended discussions like with health and with education. They're always and even safety and security, you know, police, maintaining stability, peace and order, and the dispensation of justice, Ministry of Justice, even though they have a big, big need from what you and I saw, what you and I have spoken about. They have a massive need. Those guys actually need the whole stimulation. Building the courts, maintenance of the court buildings and infrastructure, appointing everything the magistrates.
Everything from infrastructure to personnel.
So yeah, I mean it's a major talking point. But yeah.
Oh boy.
We can quickly take another live read, Helmut.
Then I can come back to page 30.
Yeah.
Get your kicks from ShopRite liquor shops. Smirnoff 1818 original vodka for only $159 and 99¢. Harrier's whiskey and Gordon's dry gin for $179 and 99¢ each. KWV 3-year-old brandy for $199 and 99¢. Richly brandy for $189 and 99¢. And J&B Scotch whiskey for just $239 and 99¢. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite liquor shops care.
Vavitcha University for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever.
9 minutes to the hour of six. So back to the minister's speech, page 13.
Yeah.
The epiphany. in our consultations, there are consultations that they did on SMEs, as, you know, where they met with let me just start, just a paragraph above that, because there's something I want to emphasize here in terms of local business empowerment, if you can call it that. That prior to finalizing 2026-2027 financial year, this page 13, looking at number 58. Mm. Prior to finalizing 2026-2027 budget, the Ministry of Finance and the National Planning Commission engaged in targeted consultations with various stakeholders, including individuals, economic societies, SME youth groups, state-owned enterprises, and OMA.
Mm.
Including the National Council and the National Assembly, but they did these consultations. Now, then she goes on to say that I would like to express my sincere gratitude to thanking all those people that they obviously did consultation. What they want to do is looking at Namibia's economy. How is the participation going on? I think that part took me back to the discussion we had last time about the ease of doing business in Namibia. Now, in 59, she points out that in our consultations, a clear message emerged. Policy certainty is essential. Investors and entrepreneurs and our development partners need clarity, predictability, and confidence in the rules that govern economic participation in Namibia. Everyone. Not just your development partners, your local businesses need that.
Yeah, your SME, which is also what our Bible says.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing they also participated in the, they participated in the consultation, the SMEs.
Mm. And civil society, I think, as well.
Yeah. But civil society also participated.
Yeah, because it's always a particular song I keep hearing, Helmut, every time. For example, when I go to civil society events about specific talking points.
Yeah.
Where they cite always, there's always unclarity about certain conversations or certain particular developments, policy and legislative wise coming through from government. And when they try to engage and ask more clarity and ask questions,
mm-hmm.
and it's not just sometimes us as journalists that also ask these questions, that you don't always get the information immediately or the response immediately. But then it comes like a month or a year later. For example, with like the cybercrime bill discussion coming 2 whole years later. 2 whole years. And who knew Namibia was busy there, attending cybercrime discussions at the UN.
The UN, yeah.
In New York City. I almost said Washington, D.C. In New York City. And it's based from that particular, from the UN convention right there. So, and this is policy and legislation,
yeah,
that this particular development speaks to.
Yeah.
That you also ask the question, so why are we mum about things?
Now, when it comes to the whole cyberspace discussion in terms of regulation, what I keep asking myself, because I was going through Interpol, Interpol discussion and some of the operations that Interpol have conducted on the African continent in terms of combating, a cyber crime.
AfriBol. But Interpol does most of the work.
It does most of the funding.
No, through the German government. It's the German government that funds most of these things.
Now, here's the thing. This is painful. Now, the most recent operation that I've come across that Namibia participated in was they called it Operation Red Cat 2.0, where about 600 something suspect were basically were arrested all across the continent, and this is mostly sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm.
Yeah, and about 4.something million in US dollars was recovered, with thousands of victims across the planet.
Mm.
Namibia is a member of Interpol, and we are participating in cyber Tura Boys crackdown. and we don't have a legislation that regulates this space.
Zero. And it's, I don't want to laugh every time, but every time where CRAN gets up and they say, no, but we've got a task force, a cyber security task force that runs on the bill. I was like,
okay, first of all, you can't say that with a straight face.
But that's what they keep forgetting, because no one interrogates the bill part of the sentence.
Yeah.
And even if they leave it out and you ask the question, yeah, but you guys are running on a bill. Why didn't you mention that part? Do you know what's the other particular scenario also? For example, the conversation of like
unless there's some, you know, some kind of provisions that will, but what type of provision would those be?
There is no such provision, Helmut. It's up in the air. You can create, you can commit a crime. Those guys have no jurisdiction because you and I already qualify, because a judge will ask you, yeah, what act?
Under which law?
Under which law must I arrest this person or charge this person?
No, but yeah, look, but these guys must now be serious because now my, okay. I don't want to use my Minister of Defense example again.
But it was very professional.
He sounded very professional.
Yeah, he did his job.
Look,
and he drove all the way to some busy region.
Well, psychologically, you can call, psychologically, you can call scammers shapeshifters. Scammers would be whatever you want them to be. If they say they are calling you from, you know, if they are calling you from MTC, they will sound as technical as possible.
Yeah.
If they are calling you from the bank, they are the best financial advisor you have ever listened to. If they are calling you in the middle of the night playing Romeo, oh boy, they are spewing Shakespeare.
Yeah, no, they are the best Ethan Hunts. You know, they play Mission Impossible on you every time.
Ethan Hunt is an excellent description.
they do Ethan Hunts on you every time. But here's the thing: it's up to you to be awake at that time. You need to be awake and aware. Now, here's the other subject matter, Hamoud. Yes, the minister also cited some other bills there. In terms of sort of like improving governance and the likes. We obviously already spoke about the procurement aspect of things.
The public finance management bill.
That too, obviously.
Income tax amendment bill. You know.
But at the heart of this has been a discussion still in terms of monitoring, evaluation, oversight, conversations. Because in between everything, you and I, we get access to the Auditor General's reports and the oversight committees from National Assembly and National Council, which also includes the SNT-induced travels outside of the country for benchmarking in various scenarios.
Yeah.
But
especially your standing committee guys. Those guys said travel.
But yes, we've seen a change in terms of how quickly the reports are coming out. Reports that they've had for excursions in 2025 are now coming out at the start of 2026. Wonderful. We just need to cut down a little bit quicker on that turnaround time. Meaning, instead of now waiting 7 months, why can't it be 2 months or 3 months? Because they literally visited places in 5 days.
Yeah.
So
they have to compile a report
in 2 weeks after that, submit them. And then by the end of that particular year, you know, at least the National Assembly would have a report to even start deliberate or, you know, start debating on or start talking on, even though they close in December for the December holidays.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, the turnaround time, improvement on oversight abilities, monitoring and evaluation. We obviously have to see how things go, because the next step would obviously be that the National Assembly guys would have to debate about the allocations.
I think most of the times, especially when it comes to these whole reports, I think they waste a lot of time on deliberating on, you know what, this is not what it's supposed to say, this is what it's supposed to say, you know, and all that. But I, don't get me wrong, I love these reports. They're pure gold. Now, if you don't know about the reports that are coming out of, that are compiled on pretty much everything from housing, agriculture, legislations itself, that's where you find, you know, that's the role of your constitutional legal affairs guys. You have one on administration. And now all these things are, all this information is basically compiled for you and me. to go through so that we can understand what's going on in the world of, what's going on in the Ministry of Environment in terms of, conservancies, for example, there's a report on that.
Yeah.
What's going on in the Ministry of Agriculture in terms of green schemes? Again, there's a report on that. And, especially if you're in the three regions that this report, the two recent ones, both on conservancies, and green schemes. If you are from Kavango East, West, and the Zambezi, and you are not aware of these reports, I'm trying not to judge you, but I am judging you.
Yeah.
Better late than never, but they really do provide insight on what's going on in your country economic wise.
This is a very
important thing, if you ask me, because for a very long time, much of the public's focus was on which politician is doing what. Like, yes, that's none of your business.
Exactly.
And if he's doing it in parliament, yeah, but if he's at house, I don't care what he's doing there. All I care about is,
our lives being improved?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they say the allegations of illegal lithium mining. The Natural Resources Standing Committee took off then. They gathered all the information only to find out, well,
it's miscommunication.
Miscommunication of the highest order.
Yeah. And paperwork was in order. There was a court case between the company and the Minister of Mines and Energy at the time. And the company won. Now, when the courts have intervened, or when parties had gone to the courts to, seek relief, unfortunately, there's an appeal process, there's an appeal avenue.
Yeah.
But when you can't see the appeal being anything plausible or could change anything, unfortunately, the courts have spoken. Yeah. But yeah.
Especially if you show up to an argument without your heads of argument.
Okay, Helmut, okay.
Let's go. Yeah. Until tomorrow, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station.
Stay tuned, guys.
Never getting a job in public time.
Let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.